Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
Well, a lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, streaming live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop your texts and your voicemails to our survey, Matt. So we had some pretty good reaction from the first part of our survey. And so we asked Bulls fans, if you didn't listen to Monday's episode or the last couple of weeks, we've asked Bulls fans to fill out a survey over the last couple of weeks ending up to the season. Just kind of their thoughts and 10 questions about the season, where their feelings are at, and just to get a little bit of a sample size. And Monday we had said we've gotten over 550 results from this poll. So thank you to everybody who filled out the survey for us. So we're going to go into part two now, the last remaining five questions that we asked, Matt. And so let's just start with the easiest one that we didn't touch on Monday's episode, and that was Rookie of the Year. This one was pretty easy. 94% of the people voted for Wendell Carter Jr., 3% for Chandler Hutchison, 2% for Brandon Sampson, and I don't know if this is a troll or not, but Rolly Alkins somehow got a vote. So I think this would be pretty,
like,
clear cut at this point. Yeah, so must be a big Arizona fan listening to the podcast.
Yeah, I mean, I think this one's pretty clear cut. Even though Wendell's season was truncated with that thumb injury, which is a shame, I think everyone, for the most part, is on the same page that of anyone who was playing their first NBA season in a Bulls jersey this year, Wendell showed us the most and has the highest ceiling. Maybe Stacey King voted for Chandler Hutchison. I don't know. Who else voted for that? You know, he calls him Young Pip. I think we saw some, at least some signs of potential brightness from Hutch when he kind of got into more of an increased role and was playing significant minutes. And you saw not only his rebounding ability, which the Bulls really liked about him, and some of his defensive chops, but occasionally being a guy who can do a few different things on the offensive end. Pretty good, you know, slasher, made some solid backdoor cuts to the basket. Occasionally would launch some threes. His form on his shots, still definitely a work in progress, although I did see a little bit of improvement there from start to finish. His first game to his last game, his release got a little bit quicker, which it definitely needed to do. I think it needs to be even quicker still. But I mean, some of those games you saw from Wendell, especially when the Bulls were without Lowry, shorthanded, and needed somewhere to go, and you really started to see some of his offensive versatility in addition to what he can bring to this team on the defensive end when he was putting up games that were, you know, 25-10 type of games. He's still got a long way to go. You know, this kid just turned 20 years old like a week ago, so certainly a developmental project, but you got to feel pretty good about the Bulls' future with Wendell and the fact that they got him with the 7th pick last year.
Yeah, and to speak on Chandler Hutchison really fast, you know, in his first 35 games, he only scored in double digits once, and then his last 9 games before he got injured, He scored in double digits four times. So you saw a little bit of a progression there. And I think as he got more comfortable as the season went on, and two, getting guys back that were healthy and also playing, they did use him as a starter at one point before they got Otto Porter Jr. So he was kind of thrusted into that role with really not having any sense of comfortability at the beginning, at least. But to me, looking at his last nine games, I mean, he was rebounding the ball way better. I mean, averaging over six rebounds per game. Just specifically looking at all of those things, I felt like Chandler Hutchison's game definitely improved in those last nine games. We were really starting to see it at the start of January, and I wish we could have seen a little bit more from him, because I feel like if the season had ended and Chandler Hutchison was healthy, I feel like there have been more people that would have voted for him his way. I felt like there was a come up that we were about to see right before he got injured. So I'm excited to see him coming back fully healthy next season and some of the things that he can learn from Otto Porter Jr. And I still feel like Chandler Hutchison's going to be a really good addition to this Bulls team. And I know people still want to make the jokes about being 22 and being pick number 22 and being the promise and all of that, but I still think he's got a role. And like you were saying, if he can figure out that three-point shot and figure out his form and be a little bit quicker there, I think he's going to be really good, man. He was one of the best defenders on this Bulls team through 44 games, so over half the season. So if anything, he's going to be a helpful piece as far as the defense goes on the bench coming off next year. So we'll see. We'll see if that those improvements are made. But I'm hopeful for Chandler Hutchison, at least.
Most importantly, too, dude has the cleanest, tightest, and inexplicably lowest hairline of anybody in the NBA.
That is true. That is very true. So, yeah, that was pretty easy, though. That was something that I think we all kind of knew that was going to be as far as Rookie of the Year goes. So let's move on from here. Let's go to which player had the most disappointing season. So I didn't give a... I didn't give a scenario or like a multi-choice here, so I let just people write it in. And sure enough, I'm not surprised by these results, Matt, but Chris Dunn got 89% of the vote, Robin Lopez 3%, Lauri Markkanen 2%, and 5% went to some combination of everyone I don't know, I don't want to answer. So, wow. What do you think? Chris Dunn, as expected, 89%.
Yeah, I mean... 89% is a huge, heavy majority. I would have guessed that Chris Dunn would be the biggest, would be the highest vote getter in this category, but not by 89%. I mean, not that I necessarily disagree with that. I agree. That's my vote for most disappointing season. It's absolutely Chris Dunn. But to think that 89% of the fan base feels that way when, you know, Markkanen got only 2%. Maybe some people wish that he didn't have an injury to start the season, maybe did more other than the month of February, had a more well-rounded season. Maybe some people were still not that impressed with Zach LaVine for whatever reason, but 89% for Chris Dunn. I guess, like, did nobody vote for campaign?
He was part of the
How did nobody vote?
He was part of the 5%.
How did nobody vote for Jabari Parker? How did nobody vote for Jabari Parker?
Is it just a recency bias at this point? Like, we kind of forgot that Jabari was even on the roster?
Right. People have already just, you know, neuralized that part of the season out of their brains, Men in Black style. But, yeah, I mean, thinking about where he came from, being part of the Jimmy trade, knowing that we felt good about a chunk of his season last year when he was healthy and put a string of really solid games together, and thinking, okay, if Chris Dunn can put together a season building on that, we might be able to talk about him fitting into this rebuild. And I know I was optimistic about it. I think you were too, Jordan. We were trying to say, not necessarily that Chris Dunn was all of a sudden made this huge leap this season, But a significant leap, and show us some progress, and show us that stretch of games in December and January of last year was not a fluke, and that he can be that kind of guy. And the fact that I think the expectations compared to the results makes it, you know, completely logical that Chris Dunn was overwhelmingly the biggest disappointment.
It's kind of sad, but maybe this is part of recency bias too, as far as the way people feel about Dunn over the last 2 months, and that could have added to this. But you're right, And part of that 5% included two votes for Cameron Payne, which I thought was kind of funny. Antonio Blakeney got a couple of votes as most disappointing. Cristiano Felicio got a couple of votes. So those were all encompassed into that 5%.
Oh, come on. Those two were nonstop entertainment all season long.
I mean, if you're thinking about those two as far as most disappointing, I don't know what your expectations were for last year as far as them coming in. Like, what kind of impact were they supposed to have? And then there was one vote where somebody said no players at all, but John Paxson and Gar Foreman, they stink. So that was one of the write-ins. So I'm not surprised. And like we've been talking about Chris Dunn for the last couple of months, thinking about his numbers and just, it's even beyond just the box score numbers, Matt, because the box score numbers aren't really all that bad. If you just looked at and it didn't pay any attention to Chris Dunn all season and you just looked at his box score numbers, they're not that bad. They're really not that bad. But then you realize once you actually get an eye test and you get to watch a couple of these games, he looks like a square trying to fit into a round hole. Like, that type of peg, it just didn't fit. And the defense dropped a little bit, so I can understand why people think he might have had the most disappointing season. I'm actually surprised Bobby Portis didn't get a couple of votes here, and that's more so towards injury than anything else, but at least for me, I had high expectations for him coming into this season, and it just didn't turn out to be what we had thought. And like, we thought he was going to be a really crucial part to that bench and maybe even a contender for sixth man, and injuries kind of plagued that and weird roles on this team. So I'm at least surprised that there wasn't a couple votes for Bobby Portis too.
Yeah, he certainly had big expectations, having done the bet on himself decision and turning down that pretty lucrative deal the Bulls offered him last summer, and then pairing that with, you know, I kind of almost forgot about this because it feels like so long ago, but when Lowry went down on the very beginning of training camp, and then all of a sudden your starting power forward role became up for grabs, and the Bulls didn't necessarily have to try to shoehorn Jabari into the three, but now all of a sudden there was an open competition and everybody figured, all right, well, with Lowry out for the first month or two of the season, Jabari's just going to be your starting four. That makes perfect sense. And then Bobby Portis beat out Jabari for the starting four spot in preseason. Like, that happened. So if you take that, and you know that maybe that doubles down as far as people being disappointed with these players and the seasons they had, but not only being disappointed in Jabari Parker, who couldn't even beat Bobby Portis for a starting spot without Markkanen in the front court, but then Bobby beating out Jabari and then just kind of fading. And some of that had to do, as you said, with injuries, but you know, big disappointments for both of those guys who ended up being sent away in the same trade. The most surprising part of this to me, though, Jordan, this most disappointing season poll, who the hell voted for Robin Lopez? What did Robin Lopez do to disappoint you this season? Not only was the dude consummate professional and, you know, hashtag leadership committee, a veteran that everybody loves and respected, put up with, you know, inactivity and DNPs when they had bigger, more important things to do. And then in the back half of the season, when people were dropping like flies and Jim Boylan was like, we got to, you know, crawl before we can walk, before we can run, Rolo had some of the most efficient post numbers like across the league. How are you disappointed in that?
I thought the same thing, too. And there was a couple votes for, there actually is more than a couple of votes for Robin Lopez, but also too, Denzel Valentine was on this list. Like, to me, like, I guess I understand. If the only place I can go to if you're disappointed in Robin Lopez's season is that they didn't get anything for him at the trade deadline, like, that's how I can see maybe you voted for him there.
Maybe.
And maybe they're not going to bring him back this summer. But yeah, Denzel Valentine was on this list too. And look, I mean, you can be disappointed that he didn't play all season.
I think Denzel doesn't count.
Yeah, that's more of an NA than anything else.
It can't be a most disappointing season because he didn't have a season. That's an incomplete grade. That's a does not qualify grade.
I mean, I think I side with the fans here. It's most disappointed I was with Chris Dunn. And so, I don't know. Hopefully the summer brings something, either a move or Chris Dunn, I don't know, all of a sudden turns into a point guard because of competition and things. Come September, it actually helps him and elevates him, but we'll find out, I guess. So let's move on. The most interesting question, Matt, I want to go to this one because I feel like we're going to spend a little bit of time on this. So one of the questions that we asked was, the Bulls have blank pick in the draft. Rate your level of confidence in the rebuild, 1 to 10. So I gave the scenario of pick 1 all the way down to pick 8 because the Bulls have a possibility to pick anywhere in between there. So I wanted people's satisfaction after they found out what pick the Bulls were going to have, what their level of satisfaction or confidence in this rebuild is. Were you surprised at any of the averages? And I'll give those to our listeners first. An average of, if the Bulls got the number one pick, the average confidence in this rebuild was an 8. That was the highest rating, average rating among all of these picks. So an 8 for the number one pick. Level of confidence, a 7 for the number two pick. Number three pick, 6. Number four, five, and six all got an average rating of a 5. And then 7 and 8 got an average rating of 4. So people feel like if they fall out of the top 6 that this rebuilds, their confidence level isn't very high. It's at a 4. And if they get between 4, 5, and 6, confidence level's at 5. Were you surprised at any of these results, Matt?
Because to me, basically, I guess maybe it's a little tricky with wording. You know, what's your level of satisfaction as a result of the lottery, and maybe your level of confidence, meaning how confident do you feel about the team moving forward in year three of the rebuild based on where they end up picking in this upcoming draft. But to me, if you know, getting the number one pick, okay, if the highest, you know, average grade was an 8, then that's an 8, and nobody even was confident enough to put a 10 on a 1 to 10 scale, that's fine. Pick 2, a little bit lower than that, you know, a confidence or satisfaction level of 7, 7.5, I get that. Anything beyond that, 3 through 8, to me, it should be a 0 or a 1. That's how I feel about this draft. I will be thrilled if we get Zion. I will be slightly less thrilled, but still pretty stoked if we get Ja Morant. And beyond that, I'm sorry, I'm just going to have a really tough time getting excited about any of these draft picks. So to me, anything other than getting the number one or number two pick is not deserving of even a middling grade. It is a failing grade. Which is why I was so on board the 14 percenters club when the Bulls were winning meaningless games in the back half of March.
So your level of confidence as far as the rebuild goes, if they get outside of the top 3, where would you say that's at, 1 through 10? 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. If the Bulls ended up with those draft picks, where are you sitting at?
As far as my confidence in the rebuild? I don't know. Probably like a 3.5 or a 4. Adding a pick in this draft that is not the number one or the number two, but anywhere 3 through 8 does not alter that all that much. That's what I'm saying.
So at 1, even if they get Zion,
because you're not getting a franchise changing player that we know of if you're picking outside the top 2 in this draft.
Correct.
You're not. So why should my confidence level in the rebuild alter if their draft pick falls somewhere 3 through 8 and nobody feels all that great about those picks in this draft?
So at least for the question that I asked you, 4 through 8 and the level of confidence I would have in this rebuild going forward, I don't think it would shift it all that much. I mean, if the Bulls got 4 or 5, if the Bulls got 4, I would stay at the same level I am at with this rebuild. And right now at this point, I feel like I'm at a 6. I'm a slightly higher than maybe some of the fans feel like at a 5. But if they end up at 7 or 8, then my confidence level in this rebuild only dips a little bit. I don't think it's the biggest disaster. Maybe that's because I've set myself up to understand that there's a good possibility that the Bulls could drop from 4 to 6 or 4 to 7. There is a 25% chance that they can drop from 4 to 7. There's a 16% chance to drop from 4 to 6. And there's like a 2.3% chance to drop to 8. So I'm not that worried about 8, but 6 and 7 is a real possibility where the Bulls could fall if things go the way that in terms of this lottery goes. And I know that there's the glass half full part is like, okay, the Bulls still have a 48% chance of getting a top 3 pick. So it goes both ways. But if the Bulls get into the top 3, specifically that 1 and 2, I go from a level of confidence in this rebuild from a 6 to an 8, Matt. So I'm kind of hanging around where the fans are at, and that's 1 and 2.
I mean, that's a big leap. I mean, but I guess that's saying that you're already starting at a 6.
From 6 to 8?
But, I mean, and I'm starting at like a 3.5 or a 4. So I feel like we're on the same page that if they end up somewhere pick 3 through 8 or maybe 4 through 8, if you want to go with the way you said it, it doesn't necessarily change how we feel all that much about our confidence in the rebuild as a whole, because I think you and I agree that you're not getting a huge franchise changing kind of player if you're picking in that range of picks. If the Bulls get Zion or Ja, aka picks 1 or 2, my overall confidence in the rebuild heading into year 3 would probably go from 3.5, 4 to maybe a 5.5. So kind of, you know, a similar 2-point jump maybe, but just starting from a lower position than where you are. I think it's crazy, or not crazy, but still kind of optimistic to say that if we get Zion or Ja, that on a 10-point scale, you have an 8 rating of confidence in this rebuild. Like, there's still a lot of questions to me.
And I think that just goes back to how you... Yeah, and I think that just goes back to kind of how what you feel about Zion Williamson and Ja Morant and where you are in terms of your confidence level right now before the draft. Like, I'm at a 6, so jumping from a 6 to an 8 isn't all that big of a jump. And I really do think, I've been more convinced, and maybe this is more about Zion Williamson than it is about Ja Morant, but if the Bulls get there, I can't, like, to me, there should be a whole hell of a lot of confidence in this rebuild. Like, I know at least me, for me, I don't think Lauri Markkanen, Zach LaVine, Otto Porter Jr., any of those three guys right now, or Wendell Carter Jr. right now, are at a star potential. And that's pretty obvious at this point. Do I think one of those guys can border on an all-star type of potential? Sure, Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, I think right now, in the next year or two, can borderline on that all-star type of potential. And I try to factor into timing as well. Adding Zion Williamson or Ja Morant, how much better does your team get in 2 years or 3 years? So to me, going from a 6 to an 8 at pick 1 or 2, I don't think is that big of a leap for me. And maybe I'm a little bit more optimistic as far as the team the Bulls have and thinking about best case scenario being fully healthy and adding one of those two guys. But I found it interesting that our listeners specifically, there was 33 people who had voted a 10 out of 10 if the Bulls get Zion Williamson. And there was 22 people who voted 10 out of 10 if they get the number 2 pick. So there are people confident in that 1 or 2 at a 10 out of 10 for this rebuild if they get Zion Williamson.
You know, another point of clarification, too. You know, as you said, maybe looking at this overall rebuild plan in the long-term scope. So adding Zion or Ja to your young building roster is something that makes you feel pretty confident about the long-term trajectory of the rebuild, not necessarily year 3 of the rebuild. Because, like, I think that's, you know, a differentiation that I want to make clear. If there are some Bulls fans out there who think adding Zion adding Zion or Ja Morant suddenly turns this Bulls team into a guaranteed 40-plus wins team that's going to the playoffs next year, I'm telling you to pump the brakes. This team won 22 games. 22. Yes, injuries were a factor, but still, you're talking about a major leap to even be a 500 team next year. And just adding one player, whether that be Zion or Ja, and then a couple of veterans, role players, maybe a veteran starting point guard if it's not Ja Morant, or maybe, you know, a veteran big man off the bench if it's not Zion Williamson, does that get you an additional 18 wins? Because that's where I'm saying to people, pump the brakes. Not to say that you can't have confidence that Zion will build into a franchise-changing kind of talent. And the same could be true for Ja Morant, and that Lauri Markkanen and Zach LaVine could be staple pieces of a new competitive team. Same with Wendell Carter Jr. But that's down the road. That's not next season.
I guess the thing that I wanted to get most out of this question is how big of an impact on your confidence level in this rebuild will this draft specifically have for you? I mean, we just went through an entire season where the Bulls clearly hung around in the bottom five all season long. And as bad as the season that was, even if the Bulls fall out of the top four, top five, I was wondering what the differentiation between people's confidence level was as opposed to getting the one or two pick. But what I found out from just looking at the detailed stats of this is a lot of people are sitting at five, no matter where the Bulls pick, where the Bulls pick falls. So their confidence level in this rebuild, regardless, is at a five. That's where we got the most votes by far. So across the board, picks one through eight, people still felt like their confidence level for this rebuild specifically was at a 5 out of 10, Matt. So I think there's a majority of this fan base that's sitting somewhere where you are, especially if they get the one or the two or the three pick, is they're sitting still at a confidence level of about a 5 or a 6. So I'm not that surprised actually by that. And that's actually a little bit more optimistic than maybe I felt like over the last couple of months in terms of the way Bulls fans felt and how big of an impact this draft is going to have. So this was really interesting.
Well, and some of that could just be that the fan base was sick of watching G League players in March.
That's true
and
too.
April.
That's very true
and,
too.
And feeling down about it, like, oh my God, this is what we're working with. But when that season finally, you know, mercifully ended, I think Bulls fans had a chance to take a breath and say, okay, well, still very much asterisk, assuming that we have health next season, which we haven't had in a long time. We have Markkanen, we have LaVine, we have Wendell. Otto arriving was pretty solid move, and adding a lottery pick to that, you know, maybe we can find some optimism going into next season.
All right, Matt, so give me your picks and I'll give you mine. We'll run through these really fast and then we'll get on to the next question. So your confidence level in terms of the rebuild right now is at, yeah, what, a 3.5, you said?
Maybe 4 if I'm feeling generous.
Let's feel on the generous side. So you're at a 4. If the Bulls get the number one pick, scale 1 to 10, where are you at?
5.
You're at a 5, so you jump 1. I'm at a 6 originally, and I jump to an 8. How about pick number 2?
4.5.
3, 4, 5?
4.
And then 6 to 8.
I'll save you some time. Everything behind pick 2, my optimism on the rebuild stays on the confidence level of 1 through 10 at a 4.
Damn. So staying at the same.
Doesn't change. 3 through 8 doesn't change. Pick 1, it goes to a 5. Pick 2, it goes to a 4.5. Real simple.
I'm at a 6, and pick 1, I'm going to an 8. 2, I'll go to a 7. 3, 4, and 5, I'll stay at a 6. If they drop to 6, 7, or 8, my ranky probably falls to a 5. So if they fall out of the top 5, I'm at a 5 rating. So it doesn't go down that much in terms for me, but in terms of if they get Zion Williamson or Ja Morant, I think I get bumped up at least a point or two. So in terms of my confidence level, so I'm very interested to see the reaction from Bulls fans just outside of this poll and seeing where they go and May 14th. So we'll see if there's a freak out or not, and if this holds up as far as the confidence level. All right, last two questions, Matt, we have on this survey. So let's start with the worst move of the season. And I gave 5 options. Signing Jabari Parker in the summer, trading for Justin Holiday. Remember, the Bulls got 2 second-round picks in that deal. They also got Wayne Selden. Signing Shaq Harrison and Ryan Arcidiacono. All the cash considerations moves, or Bulls firing Fred Hoiberg. So the number one voted, 49% of the vote goes to signing Jabari Parker this summer, and 37% of the vote in second place was to the Bulls firing Fred Hoiberg. Were you surprised at all by these results, Matt? I'm sure you agree probably wholeheartedly with the majority of Bulls fans in saying that signing Jabari was the worst move of the season.
Yeah, congrats to 49% of you for getting the answer correct. The other 51% who voted for firing Fred or something else, I feel like I can't help you. Clearly, signing Jabari was the worst move. It didn't make sense then. It didn't pan out. It was a PR disaster on day one. He didn't get along with Fred, and then he didn't get along with Jim. And the negativity kind of seeped elsewhere throughout the locker room, and also potentially had an effect on Zach LaVine, as we kind of talked about with Schanowski last week. Jabari was a gigantic disaster, and it was done as a PR move first and a basketball move second. And people who still argue and dispute that are kidding themselves. The hometown Simeon kid. Well, the Wade signing didn't work out, but let's do something similar. Let's give this Chicago kid a fresh start here, you know, here at home and sign up to this big deal. Well, but I can hear you out there. But look what Jabari's contract allowed them to do. It allowed them to get Otto Porter Jr. Okay, cool.
No.
Nice how that worked out, but you can't give them credit for the mistake of a signing that it was in the first place. It was dumb. It was in the interest of dollars, and I'm surprised that we got in a close second place, a lot of fans voting that firing Fred was the worst move of the season, because the Jabari signing was way worse. Fred needed to go. Fred is not an NBA coach.
See, I disagree with that. I would have voted for Bulls firing Fred Hoiberg was the worst move of the season. And I think in terms of the impact of this team, by far, firing Fred Hoiberg and promoting Jim Boylan, I felt like had a huge impact on the rest of this season going forward. As opposed to Jabari Parker, okay. I mean, when Jim Boylan came in, he benched him, and sure, there was maybe some problems as far as the X's and O's part, but I mean, everything else that went outside of just the actual basketball, I felt like had a more of an impact in terms of firing Fred Hoiberg and promoting Jim Boylan than it did signing Jabari. The one thing I will definitely agree on with you is the fact that now, like, I see this conversation shifting about Jabari Parker and people thinking it wasn't that bad of a deal because they ended up getting Otto Porter. Like, that's not how it works, though. They legitimately had one other offer for Jabari heading into that trade deadline. If John Wall doesn't get hurt, Otto Porter probably doesn't get traded off that Washington team. And Jabari probably ends up in LA and we end up with Mike Beasley and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. So to me, it's like I can't get on board with the idea of people justifying the Jabari signing by saying that you ended up with Otto Porter Jr. because things happen. Like if they didn't sign Jabari, that would have been better for this team. But at the same time, signing Jabari, they didn't have an outlook at saying, okay, if this doesn't work, we're going to be able to upgrade for somebody like Otto right at the trade deadline. You can't foresee things like that. So
no, absolutely not. I'm not giving the front office credit for that plan being their back pocket the whole time.
Yeah, me either.
To touch on Fred for a second, because you didn't agree with that at the time. I understand that it created a little bit more chaos than if they had just rolled out the season and plowed through with Fred. And a lot of people, it was really the timing, right, that had people confused and maybe a little upset. Well, you were just starting to get guys healthy again. Why would you fire Fred now? The reason Paxson gave is, you know, it's something that of all of the BS that we have to hear from that man made sense to me. If you don't believe that your team is buying in and following orders in the way that you want them to under Fred Hoiberg, then as you start to get healthy, you do not want those bad habits to spread through the players who have been on the shelf and are about to come back into the active rotation. I understand that logic. It makes sense to me. But more importantly than that, if you decide, and look, you know, they deserve some blame for firing or for hiring Fred in the first place, and maybe they did him dirty firing him midseason. But honestly, like, he just took a Nebraska job. He's a happy camper. He's still going to collect a bunch of money from the Bulls on the back end. And he looked like a guy who wanted to be fired after the first month of that season. He looked miserable. I think the Bulls did him a favor. And bottom line, if you, like me, hold the opinion that Fred Hoiberg showed through his first 3.5 seasons with the Bulls that he was completely incapable of performing the job, the part of his job that had to do with controlling an NBA locker room, managing and maintaining NBA egos, keeping a lot of different players on different contracts with different levels and sizes of egos happy and working together. Like, in my opinion, it is clear that Fred failed at that time and again with a number of different players. So Fred had to go. Do I care about when they fired him? No, he had to go. So in my opinion, it's not a bad move to fire him. It was a bad move to hire him 3 years ago with zero coaching search before hiring him. But in this case, firing him was not a bad move. You were fixing a bad move of hiring him in the first place by firing him.
That's something we're never going to agree on in terms of the timing of it all. And I still think the timing had a huge factor into a lot of it. Like, I get we don't know what Fred Hoiberg could have done, and we know all of his weaknesses and all of that. But to me, it still just went back to the timing and the impact that it had on this season specifically. And I think you keep Fred Hoiberg around, I think things turn around, especially when everybody else gets healthy. I don't know. Maybe it was...
When people got healthy and when they got Otto, they went whatever it was, like 6-4 in the month of February or whatever it was.
You were playing under boy ball, though, and February's weird, too. Like, February in terms of competition level, I mean, I get it, but still, they went on a 10-game losing streak in January and had one of the worst offensive ratings in the entire NBA, and in terms of NBA history, they had one of the
purposefully.
Worst.
Purposefully. They did that purposefully.
Fully healthy roster?
Yes.
I don't know about that, man. In January, they had a fully healthy roster and it went on a 10-game losing streak. And the only teams that they were beating were Cleveland and Washington. And then they had the one win against Toronto at the end of December. So, I mean, we can go back and forth about it, but...
I don't see your point.
I mean, you're saying that
Fred would have done better?
Yes, absolutely. 100%.
Okay, cool. Would that have been in the team's best interest?
I honestly don't know. At least at that point, if Fred Hoiberg doesn't work out for the rest of the season, then you fire him and actually can run a coaching search.
After Fred's 5-19 start, the team's best interest was
5-19 starting Cameron Payne.
Doesn't matter. That's semantics. What matters is you're 5-19 out of the gate. The season's over at that point. Fire Fred, put Jim Boylan in the head coaching seat, use his shock and awe campaign to legitimize going on a 10-game losing streak, and get yourself geared up towards putting yourself back towards the top end of the lottery in a shallow draft. That was the team's best interest. After Fred got them off to a 5-19 start.
They weren't trying to tank, though. Like, is that the point you're trying to make here?
They sure as hell should have been after the 5-19 start. You start 5-19 and your season becomes about tanking.
Yeah, man, I get that, but the Bulls' intention was not to tank, and that hadn't been the point. Like, they said that they needed a culture change, whatever the fuck that means. I mean, they've needed a culture change every single year, it seems like. So I get it. If you don't feel like Fred Hoiberg was the coach of the future and can do anything, that's fine. As far as how I feel, it impacted this team more than I think the Jabari Parker signing did. Firing him the time that they did that, and then also promoting Jim Boylan, I think it had more of an impact on this team as far as negative moves than it did positive. And we'll find out next season fully if everything that they've went through from December to April of this season was all worth it. We'll see if guys come back and bounce back and buy into what Jim Boylan's doing. I just don't know if I'm fully on board with that. I don't think every guy on the roster is fully on board with that, but we'll find out. And so, I don't know.
I just think, as a final thought about that, Jordan, I would be careful to differentiate firing Fred and replacing him with Jim Boylan and the tumultuous weeks that followed, because those are two different things. It seems like you're equating Fred's firing with there was a pretty ugly stint there where players were upset. They were trying to get a grasp on the new head coach and the way he operates, and they played some pretty ugly basketball for the month of January. That is not all connected to firing Fred. The best moves versus worst moves of the season, if you're arguing that firing Fred was one of the worst moves of the season, you can't necessarily say that firing Fred led to all this chaos. No, well, firing Fred is firing Fred because they didn't think he was the right guy. Replacing him with Jim Boylan, you could argue, if you don't like what happened under Jim, that was one of the worst moves of the season. But that's not the same thing as firing Fred being a bad move.
Well, the question read, Bulls, or at least the response that we put read, Bulls fire Fred Hoiberg, promote Jim Boylan. So putting that.
Oh, okay. Well, so I was not aware of that.
I mean, the promotion to Jim Boylan was more so just that they added another coach. Like, it wasn't Jim Boylan's impact for the rest of the season. It more so was focused on Fred Hoiberg's firing. And that's where it was getting at.
Whatever. Okay, fair enough. Either way, go have fun being a Cornhusker, Fred, and he's never getting an NBA head coaching job again.
And we'll see if Jim Boylan ever gets a head coaching job after this one. So, I mean...
That's beside the point. That is beside
that's true.
The point.
I just wanted to read a couple of these write-ins really fast, Matt, and we'll get to the last question, then we'll get out of here. Five-man substitution in the Boston game, considered one of the worst moves of the season. Starting Cameron Payne. Front office acting like jackasses on the radio post Otto Porter Jr. trade. Firing Hoiberg, quote unquote, necessary, and promoting Boy Boob is not the worst yet, but potentially keeping him next year might be, especially since he continues to show that he's such a boob on and off the court. Relying on Cameron Payne as your backup point guard.
Given boobs a bad name with that commentary. Come on now.
Every Jim Boylan press conference. And not shutting down the starters soon enough. That 1.5% was not out of reach, but they hesitated. None of these moves were bad. The Jabari Parker signing gave ability to go after Otto. We touched on that. All other choices were not bad. And then the final one was not trading or buying out Robin Lopez. Added at least 3 wins. Could have been the number 1 or number 2 for draft lottery for best prospects since LeBron James, which is Zion Williamson. Look, the one thing on that really fast. The Knicks and the Suns had combined for a 33-game losing streak. 33-game losing streak heading into the trade deadline. So to say that they would get the position 1 or number 2, I think at that point was like, this is out of reach at this point. We didn't expect Cleveland to go on a tear. We didn't expect the Knicks to go on a weird winning streak. And the Suns, even at one point in February, in late February, went on a winning streak. So we didn't foresee that to happen. Like, remind yourself where they were at when they made that Otto Porter trade and when they decided not to buy out Robin Lopez. The Suns and the Knicks were on a 33-game combined losing streak. So to think that they could have caught them at that point was like, I don't think this is going
to
happen.
It's not so much about Rolo and the buyout, but just not embracing the tank fully earlier. There is, like, I take issue with that. To say, well, we're pretty much locked into where we are. We can't catch up with Cleveland or the Knicks, and look at how collectively terrible they were. We know that the back end of the full, long, gruesome 82-game NBA schedule, fluky things happen. Sometimes playoff-bound teams are resting guys. Sometimes other teams are just totally broken apart and dilapidated. So, yeah, maybe is it unlikely that Phoenix and the Cavs would scrape together some wins at the tail end of the season? Maybe, but out of the realm of possibility entirely when the Bulls were not that many games behind them as they approached the deadline? No. No. The Bulls finished with 22 wins. The two teams that finished as members of the top three, other than the Knicks, had 19. You were 3 wins away. Or 3 losses away, perhaps, is the more accurate way to put it. So, no. To say that they were looking at how bad the other teams ahead of them in the lottery standings were, and to say that, it's not likely or realistic that we can catch them with... No, I'm not buying that. I think that's bullshit.
I mean, the fact that, too, and it goes back to circling back to whether or not you think that they should have tanked and whether or not that was their plan all along. Like, understanding that, to me, was the biggest thing. It's like, they weren't going to try to tank, and neither was Boylan. Boylan was, at that point, was still trying to coach for his job. I mean, whether or not you buy into the fact that they were automatically going to bring him back or not, I knew that they were going to bring him back regardless. But I think Jim Boylan, for a little bit at least, probably thought that he needed to coach for his job, and at least if he wanted an extension at that point, looked at that. And I think even we heard from John Paxson in February, and whether or not you believe that the things that come out of his mouth half the time, he said it too. He's like, we've got to figure out how to win at some point. And so to me, they didn't.
Yeah, but they also instructed Jim Boylan to slow everything to a screeching halt. And that is a huge part of the reason why they lost 10 straight games.
No, that was Jim Boylan's decision, and they wanted to speed it up.
That does not follow in line with the logic that, Jim was trying to win. They weren't trying to tank. He was trying to win for his job. No, he took the instruction from Paxson to slow things down, minimize mistakes, and, throw down an iron fist. And that led to a lot of the ugly basketball that we saw right when Jim Boylan took over.
See, I don't know if that was Paxson's decision.
So I don't think those two things align at all, Jordan.
I don't think that Paxson's decision to slow things, that wasn't Paxson's decision. I think that was Boylan's philosophy. To start by, like he said, they got to crawl before they can walk before they run.
You do what you got to do.
Sure, but...
And Jim and Paxson said, you have our full support, do what you got to do. Boylan was not concerning himself with wins right when he took over at all.
I disagree.
He said it to us. He said it's not about wins and losses right now.
Okay, regardless of the wins and losses, though,
it's about getting these guys to buy in and getting these guys to trust me and helping these young men build the right habits. It was not at all about wins, and Boylan said as much to us, to the media, to the fan base.
I still don't think that it was Paxson's decision to slow things down. That was Boylan's philosophy. That was Boylan coming in here and changing what Fred was doing originally and having to take all of that over. And then when we were in the middle of January and the offense was still awful, then that's when we heard from Paxson and Doug Collins. And they both said to start speeding things up. And that's actually when the team played better.
Yeah, okay. After a while. Yeah, after. Right, after the purposeful part in January where they were purposefully slowing things down and playing ugly basketball and losing lots of games.
Whether you think that was the front office's decision in telling Boylan to do that, I disagree with that too. I think that was Boylan's philosophy and that was his coaching. That's what he wanted to do, not what Paxson wanted to do.
And, dude, you're splitting the wrong hairs. You're splitting the wrong hairs. It doesn't matter if it was Paxson instructing Boylan to do that or Boylan saying, this is what I think we need to do, and Paxson saying, okay, let's do that. Either way, that's what happened. And it doesn't matter if it was Paxson telling Boylan to do that or Boylan having the full support of Paxson and Paxson saying, that's what we want to do. Okay, let's do that. To me, it's about the notion that Boylan was coaching for his job and that meant to him trying to win. No. Absolutely not.
So you think if the Bulls went, say they won three games under Boylan for the rest of the season when he was hired, you think the Bulls would still bring him back?
What? No. What does that have to do with anything?
It has everything to do with what we were just talking about. We were just talking about wins. You said Boylan didn't care about the wins. Why wouldn't he care about the wins? He didn't have a secure job. Like Paxson said that Boylan was the coach, right? But for the entire season, you didn't buy into that theory, or a lot of people didn't buy into the theory that Boylan was going to be back.
Yeah, not interim. They made him the new head coach.
Right, but we're thinking...
They made him the new head coach, not interim
coach. We're thinking about
that
in hindsight now. Where we were at that point in December, and even January, and even February, and even parts of March, still had this idea that, I don't know if Jim Boylan's going to be back.
Yes.
I don't know. Okay. And the coaching search might be run still.
Jim Boylan told us, it is not about wins and losses. Paxson and the Reinsdorfs put faith in me to take over this team and help these young kids develop, and that's what I'm here to do. And we heard the exact same thing from Paxson himself. It's not about wins and losses right now. It's about supporting Jim Boylan and developing our young players. So, yeah, I hold the opinion that wins and losses had nothing to do with Jim Boylan coaching for his job, as you are suggesting.
So let's just move on. Best move of the season. Same answers as before. Trading Jabari Parker and Bobby Portis for Otto Porter, trading Justin Holiday for the 2 second-round picks, signing Jabari Parker, signing Shaq Harrison and Ryan Arcidiacono, all the cash considerations moves, or Bulls firing Fred Hoiberg. So this had an overwhelming amount of votes. 80% of the votes said trading Jabari Parker and Bobby Portis for Otto Porter Jr. was the best move of the season. Matt, I have no disagreements on this
one. None whatsoever. I would put getting Melo briefly as a close second. Just because it was so freaking hilarious. And then, of course, Michael Carter Williams coming back home for, you know, a split second as a close third place. But yeah, I mean, this one, it's simple to me. The Otto trade wins hands
down. I think the sneaky move was the Justin Holiday trade. Considering best front office moves, maybe I would have said, that Justin Holiday trade was just an absolute robbery. And I mean, some people might have the opinion, even with the amount of money Otto Porter Jr. is making, still could consider an overwhelming win for the trade that the Bulls made there, too. So what's weird is they made two really good trades during this season, and usually the Bulls find a misstep somewhere. throughout the couple of seasons, but they've made pretty decent in-season moves, I feel like, even going back to the first year of the rebuild, Matt, trading Nico Mirotic for a first-round pick, even after the fight between him and Bobby Portis. So they have made some pretty decent in-season moves, so we'll give them that, but I think I'm with you. The trading Jabari Parker and Bobby Portis for Otto Porter, overwhelming amount of vote, and definitely agree with that. Just some of the write-ins really fast before we get out of here. Drafting Wendell Carter Jr., his spirit is supreme. So that's actually a good move if you're going to consider that a part of the a part of this second year. It makes sense. It's a pretty good move. Matching sure. Zach LaVine's yeah. offer from Sacramento. This actually got a couple write-ins, and that's actually a good one too.
Ooh, that's an underrated one. That is absolutely, if you're counting that as this past season, the 18-19 season, which, you know, that was the early preseason offseason part of the season, absolutely that counts. And we both felt that it was the right move, although we were a little uneasy about it, to say the least. And right now, that decision looks like a great one, because Zach LaVine is a all-star caliber player that you're paying less than $20 million a season, which anytime you have that player at that age on your roster on that contract, man, that was a solid move. Not that it was necessarily a tough call to just match that, because that was their intention all along, but still, it would have been a bad look.
Yeah, I agree. And I wish I would have put this as one of the responses for this, because I think that would have got an overwhelming amount of votes, and I think it would have been closer. I don't think Jabari's trade would have gotten 80%. I think a lot of people would have tried to vote for the Zach LaVine matching his offer. And even going back to that summer, we talked about that, saying like the Bulls can't afford to let their only potential star walk in free agency just a year after you traded for him in a big deal that you sent Jimmy Butler away for. So yeah, that's a really good one, actually. $19.5 million for the next three seasons annually. That looks like a pretty damn good deal for Zach LaVine. So another decent move by the front office, and they had to make that move because, like I said before, you can't let your star walk away that you just traded for, or at least your potential star, a year out from the trade that you just made. So that's a good one, though. That's a really good one, and that contract's going to look really good. The final write-in was just... And this is funny. The final move was surviving the season. That was what somebody said as their best move of the season. So, yeah, I guess surviving the season without any major injuries, knock on wood, to any of the core pieces. I mean, there was some injuries that ended the season, but, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Hit us up at 331-979-1369. On Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peckham, Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back on Monday with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com